My name is Ian, and I will be your conference facilitator this afternoon. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Fortive Corporation's first quarter 2018 earnings results conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Lisa Curran, Vice President of Investor Relations. Ms. Curran, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Ian. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call. With me today are Jim Lico, our President and Chief Executive Officer, and Chuck McLaughlin, our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. We present certain non-GAAP financial measures on today's call. Information required by SEC Regulation G relating to these non-GAAP financial measures are available on the investor section of our website, www.fortive.com, under the heading Financial Information. A replay of the webcast will be archived on the investor section of our website later today under the heading Events and Presentations and will remain archived until our next quarterly call. A replay of the conference call will be available shortly after the conclusion of this call until Friday, May 11th. Instructions for accessing this replay are included in our first quarter 2018 earnings press release. During the presentation, we will describe certain of the more significant factors that impacted year-over-year performance. All references to period-to-period increases or decreases in financial metrics are year-over-year. During the call, we will make forward-looking statements within the meaning of the federal securities laws, including statements regarding events or developments that we expect or anticipate will or may occur in the future. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and actual results might differ materially from any forward-looking statements that we make today. Information regarding these factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from these forward-looking statements is available in our SEC filings, including our annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2017. These forward-looking statements speak only as of the date they are made, and we do not assume any obligation to update any forward-looking statements. Before we move to Jim's prepared remarks, I'd like to take this opportunity to announce that Fortive will host its 2018 Investor Day on June 12th at Industrial Scientific in Pittsburgh. The day will focus on Field Solutions operating companies and also provide you further insight into our newly acquired Landauer and ISC businesses. Additionally, we will make available Field Solutions technology demonstrations and tours of ISC operations. Further details and registration information can be found on our investor website under Events and Presentations. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Jim.
Thanks, Lisa, and good afternoon, everyone. We are pleased by our strong start to 2018. The strength of our portfolio and focused execution by our teams using the Fortive Business System drove double-digit growth in both earnings and revenue, as well as strong expansion in gross margins and core operating margins. FBS continues to enhance our competitive position and drive growth, allowing us to make high-impact investments in product innovation and sales and marketing. As a result, four of our six strategic platforms, Field Solutions, Product Realization, Sensing Technologies, and Automation and Specialty, grew core revenue at mid-single-digit rate or better in the quarter. We were also encouraged by the progress of our recent acquisitions, including eMaint, Orpak, Industrial Scientific, and Landauer. Collectively, these businesses are growing sales at a double-digit rate. FBS and our integration process have had a meaningful impact on our ability to instill our culture of continuous improvement and deliver on synergy commitments. With that, I'd like to turn to the details of the quarter. Adjusted net earnings of $277.5 million were up 32.5% over the prior year. Adjusted diluted net earnings per share were 78 cents based on an adjusted effective tax rate of 17.9% for the quarter. Sales grew 13.4% to $1.7 billion, reflecting a core revenue increase of 2.6%, as five of our six platforms posted core growth. The success of our recently acquired businesses boosted our performance and contributed 730 basis points of top-line growth, demonstrating the strength of our capital allocation model. Geographically, high-growth markets core revenue grew mid-single digits with continued strength in Asia and good growth in Latin America. High single-digit growth in China was led by Gilbarco Veeder-Root, Fluke, and Sensing Technologies. Developed markets core revenue grew low single digits, reflecting continued strength in Western Europe and North America. Core revenue growth in North America was mid-single digit, excluding Gilbarco Veeder-Root, and was driven by strong performance at Fluke, Tektronix, Qualitrol, Jacobs Vehicle Systems, and across the automation businesses. We delivered strong gross margin of 50%, reflecting 150 basis points of expansion over the prior year, with five out of our six platforms expanding gross margin. FBS continues to drive strong PPV and productivity. Through the vitality of our brands and product innovation, all six platforms delivered positive price for a net contribution of 70 basis points. Operating profit margin was 19.4%, with core operating margin expansion of 100 basis points driven by professional instrumentation volume and favorable fall through. We believe our strong margin expansion in this inflationary environment reflects the strength of our portfolio, leading technology, and the power of FBS. During the first quarter, we generated $140 million of free cash flow, an increase of 15%, and delivered a conversion ratio of 54%. For the full year, we continue to expect that our free cash flow ratio will be approximately 110%. Turning to our segments, professional instrumentation posted sales growth of 21.7%, including core revenue growth of 5.5%. Acquisitions contributed 12.2% and favorable currency of 4%. Reported operating margin of 23.7% reflected core margin expansion of 310 basis points, partially offset by 150 basis points of dilutive operating margin associated with acquisitions. Advanced Instrumentation and Solutions core revenue increased mid-single digits during the quarter, with growth led by continued market share gains at Fluke and Tektronix. Field Solutions core revenue grew high single digits in the quarter, reflecting strong growth across all regions, led by high single-digit growth in China and the United States. Fluke delivered high single-digit core growth and posted the seventh consecutive quarter of accelerating growth. Growth was broad-based around the world and across product lines, including high single-digit growth at Fluke Industrial, as well as strong growth at Fluke Networks. I'm confident in our trajectory given leading indicators of sustained growth at Fluke, including accelerating point-of-sale data and increasing demand for new products such as the T6 family of electrical testers with FieldSense technology. We are seeing continued strong double-digit core revenue growth from eMaint, and while early, we are pleased with Landauer's performance as well. It is a great addition to Fluke Health Solutions, where FBS is driving go-to-market synergies ahead of plan and strong operating margin expansion. Industrial Scientific delivered high single-digit revenue growth, driven by strong double-digit growth in the iNet business and high-growth markets. The Radius gas area monitor launch that I referenced last quarter is performing ahead of plan, and we received several key orders for iNet Now and SafetyNet solutions. iNet Now live monitoring software provides real-time text and email alerts for gas hazards, panic, and man-down situations, allowing customers to see and respond to incidents as they happen. I'm very pleased with ISC's performance and integration success to date, which includes the March announcement to expand ISC's rentals business to include a range of Fluke instruments available for weekly and monthly rentals. Qualitrol core sales declined low single digits as double-digit growth in North America was more than offset by declines in Europe and the Middle East. We expect the softness in the Middle East to continue through the year. Helping to offset Middle East market conditions are share gains in the Americas and Asia Pacific and new product launches. For example, the new transformer bushing monitoring system provides additional functionality to help electric utilities save millions by avoiding power transformer loss and unplanned outages. As Lisa mentioned, we're excited to showcase our Field Solutions businesses and leaders at ISC this June. We look forward to seeing you in Pittsburgh. Moving back to the quarter and product realization, the platform core revenues grew mid-single digits for the quarter, led by mid-single digit growth at Tektronix. Growth at Tektronix was led by mid-single digit growth in developed markets and double-digit growth in oscilloscopes, driven by continued penetration of the Tektronix 5 Series MSO and wideband solutions. As a reminder, we will lap the launch of the Tech 5 Series next quarter, in addition to the large 3D sensing win we highlighted in second quarter 2017. While we expect core revenue growth will moderate in the second quarter, we believe this is more of a comparison issue as overall business conditions remain positive and several new product introductions, including our new arbitrary waveform generator, AWG5200, continue to drive increased customer demand and market share gains. Lastly, I'd like to take a moment to recognize the tech team for achieving an important milestone as they sold their 1 millionth value oscilloscope, further demonstrating our enduring market leadership. While PacSci EMC core growth was down low single digits for the quarter, historical high levels of backlog support our expectation of mid to high single digit growth for the year. We're excited about PacSci's MAPS, or Modular Architecture Propulsion System technology, which is resonating well with customers in new space applications. Our sensing technologies platform delivered high single-digit core revenue growth in the quarter, led by strong double-digit growth in high-growth markets and et cetera, as well as high single-digit growth at GEM Sensors. Developed markets grew low single digits, as strength in Europe was partially offset by headwinds from prior year large NAVC orders in North America. We continue to realize market share gains in target verticals, including critical care environments, and launch two new products focused on the non-dairy food and beverage market. Moving to our industrial technology segment, revenue grew 6.1% with flat core revenue performance. Acquisitions contributed 300 basis points of growth and currency 310 basis points. Reported operating margin of 18.2%, including core operating margin expansion of 20 basis points. Our transportation technologies platform core revenue declined high single digits as double-digit growth at Teletrac Navman, our telematics business, and GTT was more than offset by low double-digit decline at Gilbarco Veeder-Root. EMV continues to play out at Gilbarco Veeder-Root as we expected for the first half, while shipment timing for some large dispenser orders shifted out to the second quarter. Strong double-digit core growth in China was led by continued demand at Veeder-Root for submersible pumps and automatic tank gauges related to double-wall tank upgrades. GDR channel synergies are driving substantial high-growth market performance at ORPAC. And in addition to several automation tenders that ORPAC won in India, GVR secured several large European multi-year orders and signed a master agreement with a major African retailer for payment systems. I'm also pleased to announce today a competitive win with Chevron, where we are partnering to offer an exclusive program to Chevron and Texaco retailers to drive EMV compliance. These core business wins, improved bookings, and high-growth market automation success give us confidence in our expectation for GVR to grow core revenue mid-single digits next quarter and for the remainder of the year. Teletrac Navman delivered a low double-digit core growth led by double-digit SaaS sales growth in Australia, New Zealand, and Mexico, and continued install base growth globally. Our Director platform is the first and only product to achieve FedRAMP ready status from the Federal Risk and Authorization Program. Despite this milestone, the industry continues to struggle with integration and support issues associated with the electronic logging devices mandate in the United States. We believe this could present cost insured headwinds into the next quarter or two as the mandate takes hold. Automation and specialty posted low double-digit core revenue growth in the quarter, driven by strong automation growth in Europe and Jacobs Vehicle Systems growth in North America. JVS delivered mid-teens core revenue growth driven by increased Class 8 truck production in the United States. Cole Morgan posted double-digit core revenue growth reflecting strong demand in its industrial automation product line, which was driven by continued robotic strength in Europe and China. Cole Morgan received its first order in China for our new platform servo motor product, AKM2G, for use in a packaging and bottling application. AKM2G allows customers to decrease the size, footprint, and complexity of the machine while still getting the power and performance they need in up to 20% less space. Thompson delivered moderated core revenue growth led by mid-single-digit growth in North America, reflecting strong distribution and point-of-sale growth. The ANS business combination with Ultra, as previously announced in March, is advancing according to plan, and we continue to expect closing by the end of the year. Moving to franchise distribution, the platform grew core revenue slightly. Madco core sales were flattish as double-digit growth in hardline tools and market share gains were offset by continued softness in tool storage. Distributor sentiment coming out of our annual expo was positive, We recorded our second highest order results in Expo history, and we expect to continue to outperform the market. To wrap up, we had a strong start to the year with double-digit sales and adjusted earnings growth and outsized gross and operating margin expansion. The team's strong execution using the Fortive Business System continued to drive relative outperformance and enhance our competitive position. We're confident that our substantial M&A capacity, coupled with our focus on enhancing our portfolio and pursuing high-impact growth opportunities, will help us continue to build a better, stronger Fortive in 2018 and the years to come. At this point, I thought it would be helpful to provide you additional transparency surrounding the recently announced tariffs. With respect to Section 232, given the small amount we import, we expect the gross impact would be less than $1 million and is reflected in our guide. We expect additional impact from the second and third tiers of our supply chain, and we are actively mitigating this risk. Regarding Section 301, our focus has been to frame the exposure and stay close to suppliers and customers to understand the impact. We will continue to monitor this dynamic situation between the U.S. and China. As the situation plays out, the strength of our brands, combined with the Fortive Business System, gives us the tools to identify appropriate countermeasures. Turning to the guide, we are raising our full-year 2018 adjusted diluted net EPS guidance to $3.40 to $3.50, which includes our expectation of 3 to 4% core revenue growth or mid-single-digit core growth for the rest of the year. We anticipate core margin expansion of 50 to 75 basis points and free cash flow conversion of 110%, and we are lowering our expected effective tax rate from 20% to a rate of 19% for the year. We are also initiating our second quarter adjusted diluted net EPS guidance of 86 cents to 90 cents, which includes assumptions of mid-single-digit core revenue growth and an effective tax rate of 19%. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you, Ian. You can open the line for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask an audio question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. In the interest of time, we ask that you please limit yourself to one main question and one follow-up question. Our first question is from the line of Stephen Winoker from UBS.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon. Actually, I should say I'm used to these morning calls, right? So, listen, the first question on that GVR rollout shift to the second quarter, can you just give us a little more confidence that, you know, this isn't something that we're just going to keep seeing end of quarter shifts? What gives you high conviction that you're actually going to see this come through in the second quarter?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think first and foremost, this is really kind of the first time we've talked about a shift like this. I think as the quarter played out, what really happened was we just saw the order rate move a little bit more to the back end. So our book-to-bill was actually over one in the quarter. So we really got the orders. It was just – we really just didn't get them out, and we saw that backlog shift in the second quarter. So we feel really confident about what's there. We also implemented an ERP system conversion at Gilbarco. We wanted to do that given we see the rest of the year so strong. So we did that in January as well. That meant we had a few less shipping days in January. And so the combination of those two things really pushed a few things into the second quarter. So as we said, we'll be mid-single digits in the second quarter, and we're confident about that. As we get into the rest of the year, I think the combination of our customer conversations, as well as some of the things we've actually seen, like as we mentioned in a number of the positive things we mentioned in the prepared remarks, give us strong confidence in Gilbarco for the rest of the year.
Okay. And then you talk about 50 to 70 basis points of core operating margin expansion for the year. You did 100 basis points in the quarter of core. So how should we think about sort of what's driving the pressures in the rest of the year?
Steve, this is Chuck. So the pressures in the rest of the year, normally we're looking for 50 basis points in a normal quarter. So Q1 was strong, no doubt. We're really happy with that, and a lot of broad-based delivery through with FBS in our pricing. I think we had 70 basis points there, and we got good material cost savings. So and we also had favorable mix. We could see it, you know, come back a little bit as IT starts growing a little faster, but 70, anything over 50 is a really good number for us, and we're really happy with that.
And our next question is from line of Steve Tusa from JP Morgan.
Hey guys, good evening. Or
good evening,
afternoon
indeed.
There, I guess it is. On Tektronix, what are you guys seeing out of kind of the technology channel there? I guess both in Tektronix as well as on the robotic side for motion. There's obviously that part of the world has been growing really fast. So just curious as to, what your outlook is there for the next several quarters.
Yeah, so relative to tech, we're certainly seeing strong. We saw a good quarter in tech. I think we were mid-single digit in China, where we probably have a little bit more of electronics exposure. So off a very strong comp from a year ago. So we sort of feel like continued strength there will happen. We're also obviously building that business to be broader than beyond just semiconductor in China for tech as well, Steve. And North America was good for tech. So I think on balance, we feel good about how tech will play out in the year. A number of new product introductions that we discussed in the prepared remarks. Relative to Kollmorgen, really our main robotics exposure is really at Kollmorgen. And as we mentioned in the prepared remarks, we had really strong growth in the quarter. And we think we'll see continued strength there. The new product that I referenced in the prepared remarks is really a strong application for robotics, and we've got a number of pilots going on around the world with that technology. So we feel good about where they'll be. We'll probably moderate on the core a little bit in the second half at Kollmorgen just because of the comps, but the business will still remain strong through the year.
So, I mean, I'm sure, well, at least my associates can do the math. I'm not a math guy, but I'm sure we can all do the math. But maybe just some sense as to what the mix is like, what acquisitions you have running at today, what growth they're running at. And then obviously you've got this kind of high single-digit growth at automation, the automation business you're getting out of. If you kind of net those two out and assume the acquisitions go organic and then that automation business comes out, are they essentially like, do they add up to kind of the same organic for this year?
I think
does that question make any sense whatsoever?
Yeah, no, I think I know where you're trying to get at. Let me take a shot. Chuck can clean it up because he'll have the numbers right off the top of his head. But I think what we're seeing, well, first of all, we had a very good quarter for organic growth in the acquisitions. Obviously, they're not in the organic number, but as we look at them organically, and as we mentioned, really good performance at really those acquisitions that we named. Things like eMaint are core, so they're in the Fluke core number now. But as we think about the two, principally, or the three big ones we did last year, Orpak, Landauer, ISC, they'll go core through the second half, mostly in the fourth quarter, really. And they'll be helpful to core right now, certainly in the, but they're still small. When you look at that relative to auto, then it's sort of a separate question around what does automation do? If we look through the year, the in or out of automation in our core is about the same. So it really it's within really within a rounding error of being almost the exact same number.
I would think that's exactly right. And I think if you look over multiple years, the only thing I'd add is the recent acquisitions are probably or more mid single digit over the long term.
Yeah,
probably going to be not tie most years. Probably beat that what we're giving up there.
And our next question is from the line of Julian Mitchell from Barclays.
Hi, good evening. Question. Hey, you spoke about the margin sort of mix impact from maybe industrial tech rebounding, but I guess just within professional instrumentation, an extremely strong core margin performance in the first quarter. Was there anything within that sort of one time or may fade quickly as we go through the balance of the year?
No, Julian, this is Chuck. No, nothing unique in professional instrumentation. It's got some really high gross margins in that, and when we pop a strong growth like we did, you can sometimes see that. Now, what we'll be evaluating is how much we maybe invest later in the year, but there's nothing anomalous about what's in the PI gross margin or operating margin expansion.
Understood. Thank you. And then I guess within franchise distribution, you talked a little bit about Matco and what's going on there. It's been a lot of other industrial companies talking about pretty muted trends around automotive and so forth. Just wondered if you could give an update on your outlook for Matco and how you think overall franchise distribution trends the balance of the year.
Yeah, it's I think we're really we saw good performance from Matco in the quarter. I think as we look relative to peer companies, they clearly outperformed the industry on the backs of really strong, a good expo in things like our tools and diagnostics categories. You know, I think of those categories, Julian, as tools that that our customers need right away to do the work they're doing. So I think that speaks to that. Tool storage, which has been slower, is typically something that a customer could put off for a quarter or two if they wanted to. So I think that's what you're seeing. You know, quite frankly, new car sales slowing is actually, in the short run, tends to be a little bit better because cars being older tend to need more repair. And as most, you know, three quarters of our sales are into car repair shops as opposed to dealers. So most of our sales are not related to the dealer network. They're mostly related to repair shops around the country. So we think we've said this a few times, that as the mechanics hours and dollars start to accumulate with the 08-09 downturn, we think we'll start to see some improved economics with mechanics in the second half. And we think that tends to correlate pretty well with tool storage. So we think tool storage will start to improve in the second half, and hence Matco will start to improve. But we're very focused we're really not tied to new car sales in the short run. Now, as we've mentioned, you know, 10 years from now, if new car sales go down, then it might put a little bit of a dent in the market then. But I think right now for how we see the year, we think Matco continues to strengthen through the year.
And our next question is line of Deane Dray from RBC Capital Markets.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Dean.
Hi, Dean.
Hey, for a couple of questions on Fluke. The first is, could you take us through the economics, the extent that you can, offering Fluke on a rental basis, and you know, what kind of fleet utilization, if you can use that analogy, do you need versus the question, does it cannibalize any sales?
Yeah. Yeah, Dean, did you have a second part there?
I do, and then it's the second part of the question is just you touched on accelerating point of sale. I'm always interested in the sell-in versus sell-through at Fluke from the channel.
Yeah, got it. So you know, the economics are pretty good. What we found when we bought ISC was this rental market, which, you know, quite frankly, was pretty unknown to us at Fluke, tends to be around facility upgrades where they're taking down a site for the part of 2 or 3 months. And we saw this rental program as an opportunity to really accelerate the use of tools. And what we found is that it really is a new market, that very often people are not, they're utilizing the one tool they have as opposed to maybe needing two or three tools. And so we think for maybe 2 or 3 months. So we think the use of the rental program is going to be is really upside for us. We did a lot of work on cannibalization analysis to understand that, and the payback is really within a year. We can rent it a little bit less than twice, and it's a pretty good payback. So we feel pretty good about what the economics will look like relative to point of sale. We saw accelerated POS here over the last several months. It does move around a little bit month to month, but we feel good about point of sale at Fluke in North America. We also saw improved point of sale at Thompson, as we mentioned in the prepared remarks, as well as Kollmorgen in North America. So those are sort of our three bellwethers where we get pretty good point of sale data, and we look at those three things to see if the trajectory is pretty good. And I think right now that would suggest that things are going to continue to be pretty good.
That's real helpful. And then a follow-up question, when you're hitting the 50 basis on gross margin, that was a big threshold for Danaher, and they worked towards it, and they got there, and it was a focus for them to be, for M&A, that they wanted to be above that. How sustainable is this for Fortiv? Is it drive much of your M&A focus in terms of the economics of potential targets?
Well, it's certainly an important – let me ask you the second part first. We always look at gross margin trends in businesses when we acquire them. That's an important dynamic in terms of ability to assess market position, pricing power, level of quality of innovation. So it's always an important metric. Relative to how we think about things is we think about the kinds of businesses we're looking at that have more recurring revenue, tend to have more of a software aspect to them. Those tend to be higher gross margins. So the financial intention is somewhat, but the more important aspect of it is the strategic intent of trying to accelerate some of these kinds of business models into our portfolio. So that by nature will improve gross margins. I'd speak to the first question saying 50% gross margins in a quarter that's usually one of our lower gross margin quarters. The professional instrumentation gross margins were really good, and we felt good about industrial technologies being able to grow their gross margins despite flattish sales. So I think when you look throughout the portfolio, we're incredibly proud of the work our teams did in the quarter around FBS to drive gross margins. That's not only business model innovation, it's also the work we do. And I think it speaks to our confidence in the year.
And our next question is from the line of Andrew Kaplowitz from Citigroup.
Good afternoon, guys.
Andy.
Jim, I just want to follow up on Fluke for a second. You mentioned sellout's been strong. I would argue that you're bucking the trend of some of your peers who've had some shorter cycle weakness crop up. I think you mentioned Fluke was up high single digits, including Fluke's industrial business was also up high single digits. So are you just taking share in your markets, or would you say that there's any difference between maybe your energy-focused businesses within Fluke versus your industrial businesses?
Well, I think when we look at our channels, we would probably tend to think that it's hard for us to differentiate pure industrial from maybe what is getting some benefit from oil and gas. So I would just maybe speak to that caveat first of all. But our you know, if I take Fluke, our core point of sale is outgrowing. Our sell-out is faster than our sell-in, so that feels good. I think probably some of it is market share. We're doing a really good job on innovation, so that's certainly part of it. But so I feel good about that. But we have strong partnerships with a lot of our industrial distributors, and I think that also has a, you know, we're able to make the, you know, some of this is making our market because Fluke has pretty high market share. So some of the things they have to do is really to make their market.
Okay, that's helpful. And then maybe somewhat of a related question, but several of your peers have displayed some weakness in Western Europe this quarter. I'm not sure if it's Easter or maybe slightly weaker macro, but it doesn't seem like you guys saw that weakness. But maybe you can elaborate on that region and then whether you will see any improvement in the Middle East as oil prices have begun to respond here.
Yeah, it's a – you know, I think – maybe I wanted to just – I forgot one part of the – POS answer too is, you know, we're seeing really strong POS right now. We'll start to get to some tougher comps in the second half. So we'll see strong POS. We expect strong POS in the second half, Andy, but probably the numbers might be a little less just because we'll be working off good comps in the second half. Relative to Western Europe, we had a good quarter. We've got a couple of secular things like Qualitrol where they transact some of their business for the Middle East through European OEMs. So that slowed us a little bit, but in places like Fluke and Kollmorgen, you know, a number of our bigger businesses, we saw good business in Europe. You know, we continue to say, and I think I joked about this on the call for the end of the year call in January that we continue to think Europe will slow, and then it ends up being pretty good, and it has to do with, I think, the execution that we've got across a number of our businesses to really do a good job in our innovation, and some of the trends like robotics and things like that are driving the business as well.
And our next question is from the line of Jeff Sprague from Vertical Research.
Hello,
hey, Jeff.
Everyone. Hey, how
Jeff?
You guys doing? Hey, good. Hey, we hit most of the business questions, I think. Maybe just unrelated. On tax, obviously you guys have are expending a lot of resources there. What do you view as your entitlement on tax rate? Is there some more opportunity there?
Thanks, Jeff. I do think our tax team would think that's part of business too, and we're really happy and proud about their results. But I think that we lowered the tax rate to 19% for the year, Part of it was the Q1 coming in lower as really just option exercises were higher than we had modeled. And then looking forward, it's coming down the rest of the year a little bit as we've got a better idea about the mix of our earnings likely to be this year outside of the U.S. and that planning. Entitlement, no, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say we have an entitlement, but I would say that our tax team, change is opportunity for them, and certainly there's been a lot of change with tax reform, and also then when you put acquisitions on top of that, it gives you a lot of options for things to do. I wouldn't say that we would we're entitled to anything, but we're always looking to see what else we can do here.
Jeff, I would just add, I think Chuck wouldn't say this, but you know, I think at the end of the day, it's pretty easy for people to look at the tax rate improvements we've had in less than 2 years and say it's kind of the Trump administration. But the reality is our tax team has done an outstanding job at really looking for opportunities. They apply continuous improvement in the same way that we do everywhere else in the company.
Should we expect cash taxes to be mirroring this, gap tax rate we see, or plus or minus relative to that?
We actually have now got our cash tax rate under our effective tax rate. So it will, for the foreseeable future, it's going to be less than the 19% we've got modeled now.
And our next question is from line of Richard Eastman from Baird.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you.
Hey, Rick.
I noticed in the, the guide kind of picks up the core growth by a point or so for the full year now. I mean, we're talking mid-single digits versus 3-4. Is that where's the extra point of core growth coming from? Where's your confidence? Is that Gilbarco and Matco, or?
So it's a number of things. First of all, the guide for the year was always 3-4, and we always saw the first quarter being low single and the rest of the year being mid-single. So we really don't see that much has changed here. There's a little bit of timing, as we talked about at Gilbarco, in going from Q1 to Q2. But really, we don't see that as a change. We do see, as we've been talking about and Jim mentioned earlier, that Gilbarco will start to will turn to growth in Q2, but in the second half we've always thought that as we get closer to that EMV deadline.
Okay, and then again the adjusted guide for the full year went up by a nickel at the midpoint, and you know we were about 4 cents above the midpoint in Q1. I think if the tax rate comes down to 19%, that's another nickel perhaps. Just a little bit curious here. I mean, do we still have a little cushion in there, or is there some slippage on mix or anything like that?
Well, we took the guide at the low and the high end up a nickel, and that's 4 cents on the tax rate coming down, and another penny there for FX. We really like the fundamentals of the company going forward, and a mid-single digit growth for the rest of the year is really good, and that's going to drive above our normal 50 basis points of OMX, and that's not different. We are aware, though, that we're sitting at Q1, and there's a lot of the year left to play. So we went with read-through in Q1 and then taking up tax and FX.
Rick, I'd just add that, we're really focused on outperformance here, and I think what we demonstrated in Q1 is when you look around the portfolio, professional instrumentation is a great example. We had great, very strong performance. We took market share. And so if the market's better, I think we'll outperform. It's still early days, as Chuck mentioned, but we're focused on outperformance. And certainly it's early. But if the market's continues strong, then, we probably have a little bit of upside in some areas. But we're very much focused right now on what we can see. And as Chuck mentioned, there's also some risky things there that we want to make sure we can take care of. And the last thing is we want to make sure we continue to invest in the business. It's one thing for us to have a number of good quarters, but as having followed us for a long time, we're very focused on 19 and 20 and 21, and so we're going to always work towards making sure that we're investing in the future as well.
And our next question is from line of Sawyer Rice from Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, hi, good evening.
Hey, sir.
Hey, sir.
just maybe a question here again. Yeah, most of the questions on the quarter have been answered here, but maybe stepping out a bit, looking at the M&A channel and pipeline here, you'll obviously have some expanded capacity post-Ultra. So just any sense of the multiples you guys are seeing and maybe, you know, size of assets in the pipeline, and then maybe I'll just tuck my follow-up in here, but any urgency to bring on, you know, maybe another platform-sized acquisition post-Ultra? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And I think first, as we've talked for, you know, each quarter, M&A is episodic. I think a year ago we were talking about that, and then within, you know, a quarter or so we had a number of transactions completed. So we're working hard. We're very busy. There's a number of things that we're obviously very involved in and feel confident in saying that we will get M&A done here in the future. Relative to I think there's a little bit of a difference in bid-ask spreads right now. So we're probably seeing a little bit of seller short of maybe this week, expectations on sellers of being a little high. I think that's one of the reasons why you haven't seen a lot of M&A done in the last 6 months amongst a lot of our peer group as well, particularly the big stuff. So I think there's certainly opportunities, but I think expectations maybe are a little higher. So that's one thing. I think relative to how we think about new platforms, you know, 2 years ago when we went out, I said, hey, probably within 5 years, we would probably add a new platform. And now we're 2 years into it with 3 years left. So I guess the probability of doing a new platform is more likely. But we really like the $30 billion of served market that we have within the current portfolio today. You're going to hear at our investor conference how the West Pringle thinks about that with our field solutions platform and the opportunity there as well. I think that's a perfect example of how our platform leaders think about growing their platforms. And we've obviously done that. You see that in the results in the first quarter, where I think field solutions is up over 20% in total, the professional instrumentation is up over 20% in revenue between core and non-core because of the way we built out those platforms. So you're seeing that kind of success, and you'll hear about that. So we don't necessarily feel obligated to create a new platform, but there's certainly opportunities to improve the portfolio. We've talked a lot about that and the kinds of things we're looking for to add to the portfolio. And if there's an opportunity to do that, we certainly would love to do it.
Great. Thanks for the color.
And our next question is from line of Scott Graham from BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, good afternoon. Good evening. Just a couple of questions. First, in field solutions, the conversion to Accelix, and I think I last spoke with Wes, there were sort of 60 tools, I guess that was sort of mid last summer, which represented sort of about 5% sort of connectivity tools of the portfolio of, you know, the conventionals. Where are you on that number of tools curve and percentage of conversion at this point?
Well, I think probably what Wes was alluding to is that about 5% of the market is probably has those tools. We probably have a bigger percentage of our portfolio than 5, so it's probably a higher range of that. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but if we look at some of the key categories, we've got a number of tools now that are out there. I think the best thing I could say about the quarter is the acceleration of core growth at Fluke is getting a number of those connected tools out. I'm not sure what the exact penetration is, or we'd certainly get back to you on that, but we're certainly continuing to accelerate that. We talked in the prepared remarks of our FieldSense technology and our T6 family of testers. Those are some places where we'll have connection as well. So we certainly think that we're continuing to accelerate that. I think and as we think about more broadly around Accelix, we felt really good about the quarter. We mentioned eMaint doing a great job. That's really a core part of our software portfolio. The connected tools, and as well as just our overall tool sales, have been good to be able to put tools in the hands that they can utilize what they want to do. Our SHAD business is doing well. The one place where we've maybe been a little slower is on the condition monitoring aspect of this, and while we feel very good about the solution, it just is taking longer for customers to convert pilots. So we've said that for a couple quarters here, and it remains true. I suspect that the selling cycle we're learning is just a little bit longer, but we feel good about where that's at. And we'll certainly detail that in a great level of, or we'll give a great level of detail to that at our investor conference when we focus on field solutions.
Do the rentals help the conversion speed or hinder it?
I don't think they hinder it, but I'm not sure they really help it. I think, the rental program will typically be for more of a part-time thing. It won't be a high-volume thing. It's really more to fit a niche of when customers at the end of the day need more tools and have reluctantly bought. More than likely, they've just tried to get more out of the tool that they have, and I think it's just an opportunity for it to be more pervasive. It's still early days. I think it'll take us a little while to know if it really helps our Acrylic strategy or not.
And our next question is from the line of Brian Drab from William Blair.
Hi, good evening. Just a couple questions left here. The Landauer business that caught my eye as I was looking at Lisa's email, up mid-single digits, excluding the large orders. Can you talk a little bit about, how regularly you see large orders in that business? And is, the Landauer acquisition in general going as expected? And, what any thoughts on accretion in that business?
Yeah, I think typically what we see, Brian, is that, that business doesn't have a lot of large orders. It's typically government-related, I think, when occasionally. And we see that in our current, the Fluke Biomedical business, that, which really makes up the other part of Fluke Health Solutions. Throughout that business, the only time we really see large orders is when a government agency will buy at one period of time. And that happens maybe once every other year or something like that. So that's the frequency of that. We feel really good about the progress we've made on the margin side. Chuck and I were with the team earlier in the year for their 100-day strategic plan, and I was just struck by how broadly the organization was telning us how the Fortive Business System tools are really applying to them as they try to fix a lot of the things that they wanted to fix for a long period of time. So right now, the business is a little bit better from a core perspective than we anticipated. That's good to see. We're seeing pretty good fall through there on the margin side. But it's still early, so I think we certainly believe strongly that we'll continue to make the business better. But but I think it's still early days, and it's going to be a good deal for us, and we're confident in the long term returns here. Both the short term and the long term returns are coming in as planned.
Okay, great. And then just one more quick one on the organic revenue growth, mid single digits for the balance of the year. The easiest comp looks like it's coming in the fourth quarter. Can you give us any additional granularity in terms of, which quarters would have, slightly better or worse organic revenue growth?
Well, it's still, it's pretty, it's fourth quarter. Well, it's funny because fourth quarter seems like a long way away, but it'll probably be here tomorrow. But the reality is probably the fourth will probably end up being one of the better quarters, but we're going to see relative consistency for the next couple quarters, and obviously we'll see how things play out. But we feel right now that all the quarters will be pretty close, and so I think that's the way I think about it.
And our next question is from line of Joe Giordano from Cowen.
Hey guys.
Hey Joe.
Hey Joe.
Got two for you. One, as you kind of progress with this portfolio transformation strategy, that's has very clear characteristics of the companies you're looking for in terms of cyclicality and things. How does that translate into like maybe morale at some of the companies in your current portfolio who may not have those characteristics? No one wants to be like someone else's cost synergy. So what are you doing to maybe get ahead of some of that?
Yeah, I think more people, I would say that the excitement coming out of the separation continues. Our employee engagement has never been higher. We feel good about all of our businesses and how people feel about the portfolio. I think all of our businesses that'll be remaining in Fortive have a play in some of the business model transformation that we've been talking about. Maybe a slightly different aspect to that, whether it's maybe more services in one business, some other businesses might have a little bit more software. But the ability to improve recurring revenue, the ability to reduce cyclicality is something that all of the businesses have been working on. Even the businesses that are going to Ultra have done a great job in that regard. So I think it's really zero issue with morale. And I think, we have really high expectations about what our businesses can do. And I think our businesses are living up to that, and so that's what we talk about. And our conversations are always about making businesses better, and that's a consistent theme through our history. So I don't think this is really different than what we've had, and I'm pretty close to the organization, so I feel pretty confident that our ability to sort of drive continuous improvement in the portfolio, make our businesses better, is a recurring theme that everybody understands and believes in.
Okay, and then Chuck, if you could just strip out, what was core growth this quarter if you just take out the A&S segment? And if you were at least the businesses that are effectively sold, and how is that like in your internal model for the mid-single digit for the rest of the year? How much do you have in your model of that those businesses contributing to that?
We'll take the second question first. We have the A&S businesses built into our model for the rest of the year. And that's not going to change until we have until the deal gets closed, which we have said will be at the end of the year. I think the important thing is if we take the A&S businesses out of it and really we look at the business without GVR in there, it's the same 5.5, mid-single-digit growth. But without the A&S businesses, it's a low single digit, just like it is for the total.
And our next question is a follow-up from the line of Steve Tusa from J.P. Morgan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the follow-up. Just expanding a bit on the acquisition questions. How will you kind of handle, this thing's going to close at year end? You obviously don't want to, press on deals just to kind of, bridge the gap from EBIT, lost from these divestitures. Or do you have that aim to get something that you can get done and close by the time kind of next year comes around? Or how will you kind of handle that guidance for next year when that time comes that to kind of bridge the gap?
Well, Steve, I'll go first, and then Jim can chime in. But we're just looking at it. Those are two things that we're working on very hard. We're very pleased with the progress we're making towards the Ultra deal, and we're on track with that, and we'll get it done at the end of the year. And then separately, we're working very hard to do M&A as we have always been. But as you know, the timing of that is. You really can't control that. So I understand what you're saying, but realize we're working very hard to do both of those things, and the M&A will fall when it falls. But we're optimistic about what we're seeing out there.
I couldn't answer it any better,
so I'm just going to say hi.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And our next question is a follow-up from the line of Scott Graham from BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, I wanted to ask a question on EMV. Does the lower tax rate structure we're facing here increase the $500 million plus market opportunity?
No, I don't think so. I think the number of states, we've wondered if it would accelerate some things. We don't see that thus far. I suspect because the mix of kinds of customers we have, from large scale retailers to small mom and pop shops, probably their tax strategies differ wildly. But we don't think it really changes the market. The things, it's a compliance driven situation. So the idea that people would do less is probably not going to happen. They're obviously going to want to be compliant. So the regulatory environment is really the driver here, and we suspect that's the real driver. As I mentioned, we thought maybe the tax might accelerate some things. Haven't seen that yet. But we do, as we mentioned in a couple of different situations, we now think the business is going to be in growth mode for the remainder of the year. And we said that a year ago, is that we thought we'd have an air pocket in Q4 and Q1, and then we would move to growth in Q2. And quite frankly, that's what's playing out.
Yes, you did say that. My second one is an easy one. Chuck, was mix positive in both segments?
Was mix positive in both segments? No, it's. I think. Well, so the mix I talked about was between the segments. So that with PI growing faster than IT, that drove a little bit more VCM fall through. When you look in within the segments, I think that I could say yes, because I think they're both showing margin expansion on both of those segments. So I guess the answer would be yes.
And we have a question from the line of Charlie Brady from SunTrust Robinson Humphrey.
Hey, thanks. Just a bigger picture, kind of longer term question for GVR. You know, when we get through the deadline here, we've effectively replaced a good chunk of the installed base in the U.S. I'm sure you thought about it, but what happens? How do you maintain at least some growth, or you mitigate the downtick that's going to come at GVR? Is it a function of just trying to, you know, get more recurring revenue on that product stream, or what's the thoughts around that kind of a longer term broad basis?
Yeah, we'll certainly have a year where we're coming back from that, depending on how the revenue plays out. I think what we said was the move from 2020 from 2017 to 2020 helps that and sort of mitigates the drop, if you will. And what we're really focused on, Charlie, has been about the recurring revenue model, growing the business organically in high growth markets, building a larger base. A lot of the ORPAC acquisition that we did last year was really focused on that. And as we mentioned in the prepared remarks, we're off to a very, very strong start there, building a great business in places like India, which are making massive investments in their network. So those are going to be the kinds of things that we can do. And of course, we'll obviously working to mitigate the earnings at a Fortive level as well. So, yeah, we'll probably have some time where Gilbarco will go negative for a little bit. But between building the recurring revenue model and some of the things we're doing from acquisitions, we feel good about the size and scale of that network and what we can do, because the technology upgrade that will come through EMV will allow for us to do a number of things with data analytics and supply chain logistics with customers that will build into our recurring revenue model, which we call Insight 360, by the way. So I need to get that in there.
And at this time, I'm showing that we have no further audio questions. Presenters, I turn it back to you.
Well, thanks, Ian, and thanks, everyone, for taking the time to spend with us today. I know you're all busy. This is a busy week for all of you and a busy couple of weeks for you. We feel very good about the quarter. We couldn't be more pleased with what we saw from an Fortive Business System perspective and the quality of work that our teams did throughout the quarter to make the quarter possible. And quite frankly, we're really excited about how the year will play out from at this point forward. We're really excited to see you in June in Pittsburgh. We hope all of you can make it. I think you'll see the quality of how we build a platform. You see and more importantly, you'll see the quality of the team that we have, the players that we put on the field every day to make the business so successful. So we'll look forward to seeing you soon. And I know Lisa and Chuck and team are available for calls. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for joining us for the Fortive Corporation's first quarter 2018 earnings call. You may now disconnect.